Good morning. My name is Matt McSpirit. I'm a technical evangelist based in Redmond, originally from England. And I'm here to tell you today about how Windows Server, the Microsoft Operations Management Suite, and Azure Stack can help you modernize your data center. Now, this session, around about an hour, each of the sections I'm going to walk through will introduce key new technical areas that will be explained later in the day. So things like containers, storage, networking, and more. So my agenda really focuses on some of the key investments we're making in the platform. So firstly, Hyper-V, Microsoft's enterprise virtualization platform, continues to grow with new features and capabilities. And I'm going to focus in on one particular area in this keynote, specifically security. It's an area that's incredibly important to all of us in the room, and it's going to enable you to really secure your virtual infrastructure more than ever before. And it's a feature that's unique to Hyper-V. It doesn't exist in any other virtualization platform. Once we've discussed a bit about Hyper-V, I want to talk about storage. Storage is one of the most expensive areas of any IT investment. But the work Microsoft is doing in Windows Server 2016 to lower the cost of storage and transform low-cost hardware and disks into enterprise-grade storage is revolutionary, and it's built into Windows Server. And on top of this platform, we're starting to introduce new ways to deploy Windows Server. We have a new deployment option for Windows Server 2016 called Nano Server. Nano Server is the future of Windows Server. It's smaller, it's lightweight, it's incredibly efficient, and it is our future from a Windows Server perspective. You'll learn more about Nano Server a little bit later on. But then we think about applications, and the world of apps is changing. We have to think about how we can better deploy applications within IT, within the public cloud, across the globe. And to do that, we're embracing containers. Containers have been around in IT for a number of years, mainly in Linux. But as we move forward in Windows Server, built into Windows Server 2016, we've now built a containers platform to enable you to package applications and deploy them incredibly quickly at scale. So we'll talk briefly about containers and how they're different from virtual machines and the advantages they bring. But all of this is no use without effective management. And when we think about management, we can't just think about management of on-premises resources. We need to think about management more broadly. Management of workloads in the cloud, public cloud, private cloud, on-premises, wherever it may be. Microsoft workloads, Linux, VMware, AWS, it doesn't matter. We need to think about how we can manage all of those investments from a single place. And that's where our Microsoft Operations Management Suite provides a lot of value. And so I'll spend a few minutes later talking and showing how that all comes together. And then the final big investment is something that we've been investing in for a number of years, and that's Azure. Azure is our hyperscale, enterprise-proven hybrid cloud. Azure exists across the globe in data centers all over the world, but it also influences how we build Windows Server and our on-premises technologies. So much so that we want to enable you to run Azure in your data centers, because we realize that not all locations have Azure data centers, and therefore having an Azure experience that's local to Spain is important. And that's where our Azure Stack comes in. Azure Stack takes Azure technology and brings it to your data center, enabling you to build an Azure consistent hybrid cloud between your data center and Microsoft Azure. So essentially, bringing the power of Azure to you. And I'll spend a few minutes at the end of the session walking you through Azure Stack and showing you some of the capabilities. It's an incredible piece of technology that really does enable you to deliver true hybrid cloud within your data center. So those are the key areas that I'm going to focus on in the keynote. So when we think about that first area, Hyper-V, Hyper-V has so many new features in Windows Server 2016 that you'll learn about in the later sessions. But the one biggest feature that's the most important of all of them is around security. Security affects all of us. And when we think about the increasing number of attacks, cyber attacks, security is even more important for virtualization. So think about your environment. Think about your virtualization platform, whether it's Hyper-V, VMware, KVM, it doesn't matter. Just think about your environment. Virtualization has introduced some new security challenges. So think about this for a second. If you are the virtualization admin or the fabric admin, and you control the virtualization hosts, Hyper-V hosts, vSphere hosts, whichever, you pretty much have access to everything. You may not be the domain admin. You may not be the storage admin or the network admin, but you still have access to the key virtualization infrastructure, and that is very powerful. And what I mean is, if you were to think these virtual machines in red, where the number 2 is there, they were domain controllers. You as the virtualization admin could very easily copy those virtual machine files, put them on a USB disk, take them home, and attack and brute force attack those virtual disks, extract information, and you could compromise, if you really wanted to, the entire IT infrastructure. Now think about malware. Malware could do exactly the same thing. If malware infected your environment as an administrator, it could get access to all of the virtual machines and data because of the privilege of the administrator. And in the public cloud world, that could be even more disastrous. If you're a service provider or a hoster and you have hundreds of customers and one of your virtualization hosts is infected or compromised, they could get access to a lot of information and data. So Microsoft is attacking this problem and has been attacking this problem for 2 to 3 years. And in Windows Server 2016, we think we've got the solution. The solution is what we call shielded virtual machines. And shielded VMs introduce a strong separation between the Hyper-V hosts and the virtual machines, meaning the administrators who run the Hyper-V hosts don't have as much control or access to what's in those virtual machines. They're secured, they're encrypted, and that means that they can't be compromised in the same way. Now, this is a unique security feature to Hyper-V. So, at a high level, what is a shielded VM? Well, the shielded VM ensures that the data and the state, so when the virtual machine is running, they're protected against somebody looking inside the virtual machine at the data, theft, and tampering with that from both malware and a malicious administrator. And that could be a virtualization admin, a storage admin, a server admin, a network admin. The virtual machine is protected from all of them. Now, they can still be managed. Don't worry, you can still manage these virtual machines and you can still connect to them over the network using RDP and still manage them through your management tools. But if you want to infect or compromise that virtual machine, it's protecting against those kind of things. So if we think about how things look in an infrastructure today, if you have a physical server that's locked away in the data center or in the computer room, there are a number of different people who can access this. The server administrator, yes, I can access that server, it's locked away, but I have the key. But the storage admin, the network admin, the backup operator, the virtualization host admin, they can't access that physical server. It's locked away in the data center. But with virtual machines, all of those different people can potentially access the VM, the data. The virtualization admin can access the VMs. The backup admin can access the VMs because they are backing up the VMs. The network admin can reach the VMs. The storage admin can reach the VMs. And the server admin can reach the VMs. So that's a very broad spectrum of who can get access to that VM. So virtual machines, in some ways, are less secure than physical. However, with shielding, when we turn on shielded virtual machines, all of those different administrators can no longer access and remove data from those VMs. So we're really controlling and locking down how we protect our virtual infrastructure. But how is this controlled? Well, at a high level, we're introducing a new technology in Windows Server 2016 called the Host Guardian Service. The Host Guardian Service is an inbox technology built into 2016 that essentially says, okay, these Hyper-V hosts, I trust them. They are healthy, they are not compromised, we've checked them when they've booted up, there's no malware, they are safe to run our shielded VMs. However, these Hyper-V hosts, I don't recognize them. They're not part of my environment. They're not part of our guarded fabric. Therefore, I will not allow a shielded VM to start on those Hyper-V hosts. So straight away, you're introducing a more controlled way of where you can start shielded virtual machines, only on trusted, guarded hosts. And those guarded hosts have to be compliant. They have to be healthy. They have to be trusted. So for instance, the Host Guardian Service will say, or will speak to the Hyper-V host and communicate, the Hyper-V host that wants to start a new virtual machine will ask the Host Guardian Service, can I start this virtual machine? Can I have a key, a decryption key to start this virtual machine? And the key protection service, the Host Guardian Service, will say, yeah, you look healthy, you seem healthy, you can have the keys you need to start the virtual machine. And that's how essentially a shielded VM works. So when you turn on a shielded VM, there's a virtual TPM chip. So anybody who has a modern laptop today will have a TPM chip inside for encryption, for BitLocker. We've virtualized the TPM in Windows Server 2016. So we can now run a virtual TPM inside a virtual machine. And that means we can encrypt inside a virtual machine. But it's not just about encrypting the disk. The running state of the virtual machine is also encrypted. When the virtual machine is live migrated, it's encrypted. So all of the key aspects of the VM are encrypted. Crash dumps are encrypted. And also, the fabric admins, you can't attach a debugger to the virtual machine, that won't work. You can't access the console of the virtual machine, that's locked down. The virtual machines that are shielded will only run on the hosts that are considered healthy and in the Guardian service. So to illustrate, let me show you a quick video example, a good demo that helps to understand just what's happening with shielded virtual machines. So what we have here is our view of, let me just start this off, there we go, a Windows server, and I'm the fabric admin, and I'm navigating to a virtual disk that I've copied from a virtual machine. So I've logged in, I've copied a virtual disk, and I'm going to mount it using regular Windows Server tools. Nothing special here. And this virtual disk happens to be from a virtual machine that's a domain controller. And you'll see that very quickly we're able to explore that virtual disk and get access to domain credentials. Now, if I just pause that for a second, the Active Directory database that's contained within that virtual disk, I could download any one of 7 freely available tools on the internet to crack that database. And that's all I would have done. I would have copied the virtual disk to my system. Nobody would know. I've copied the virtual disk, I've brute force attacked that database, and I've got my passwords. So now, I have essentially the domain passwords for my whole domain. I can then start to look inside and start to use those maliciously. Very simple scenario. But let me show you how we protect against that using shielded virtual machines. So I'm here in the Windows Azure pack. I'm going to deploy a new virtual machine, but this virtual machine is going to be shielded. And the way you know that is because there's a tiny little shield icon. That was the graphics that represent how a protected virtual machine looks. So we're choosing a shielded template to deploy a virtual machine from. So we'll click Next. We'll enter some information. We'll give this virtual machine a name. And what we're doing here is very, very significant. We're selecting what we call shielding data. This is very important because if I were to enter a username and password in this wizard, I'd be giving IT my username and password. I'm trying to protect against that problem. By using the shielding data, it contains all of the important secrets and keys necessary to start that virtual machine. So we contain all of that information in these files, and we give those to IT to provision our virtual machines. So that shielding data is very, very important. So we'll give the virtual machine a name. Let me just proceed the video. And once that virtual machine has its name and we choose the respective shielding data, video is finished. The virtual machine will be deployed, and from there, that virtual machine is completely encrypted and protected. So that's just a quick example of how we essentially protect and shield virtual machines. I'm not sure why my little video has stopped working there, but that's okay. It gives you the idea. The key takeaway here is we're encrypting the virtual machines to make sure that they are the most secure that they can be. And this is not available in any other virtualization platform. This is unique to Hyper-V. Now, Hyper-V in 2016 has a number of other new capabilities and features, from availability, keeping virtual machines running as long as possible. Upgrades is a huge, huge improvement. Rolling upgrades enable me to move from Windows Server 2012 R2 Hyper-V to 2016 with no downtime, with no extra hardware. So I've got in place upgrades across my physical Hyper-V host. I don't need to add additional hardware in order to upgrade my environment. And then finally, there's just things that make Hyper-V better to manage. PowerShell Direct is incredibly cool, enabling me to PowerShell into a virtual machine that may not even be connected to the network. Again, very useful from an administrative perspective. So that's a little bit about Hyper-V, and you'll learn more about Hyper-V in the next session. But what about storage? Well, storage is an incredibly important area because it's expensive. It's often very costly and also complex. And we're trying to bring down the price and complexity using software-defined storage in Windows Server 2016. But first, it's important to think, well, what is a SAN? Many of you, I'm sure, will have investments in SAN technology for storage. And what are you buying? Will you purchase a chassis, a box that's full of disks, magnetic or SSDs? You have some controllers that aggregate the disks, that present LUNs, that provide the advanced functionality of your SAN. And then you have connectivity, fiber channel, iSCSI, networking. That's essentially what you buy when you buy a SAN. But typically there's a high price point. But with Microsoft, we're taking a very similar approach. Get your physical disks, SSDs, regular spinning disks. Aggregate them into a JBOD or into the server chassis itself. The controllers are Windows servers. Windows Server 2016 becomes the file server controller for your storage infrastructure. You create a scale-out file server, you aggregate all of the disks, and you present file shares over the network. So the connectivity is just over the network using SMB. And this architecture, this view, has been around since 2012. We first started working on this in 2012. Enhanced in 2012 R2, and enhanced even more in 2016. So let me bring you up to speed with the architecture from 2012 R2. Firstly, you have what's called a JBOD. The JBOD is just a bunch of disks. It's a box filled with disks. No intelligence, just disks. Magnetic or SSDs or a mix. And from there, we connect via SAS to our file servers. These are regular industry standard Windows servers. Nothing special about the hardware. Low cost, high volume, cost effective. And this combination transforms the servers and storage into a storage infrastructure, a software-defined storage infrastructure. And from there, our Hyper-V hosts, our virtualization hosts, connect over the network using SMB3 high-performance protocol, and that's where you store your virtual machines. And this combination is incredibly cost-effective, but gives you the same performance, the scale, the resiliency that you expect from your storage array. So we're ticking the key boxes that people look for in storage. When we think about 2016, we've got new architectures. The first is what we call a converged or a disaggregated architecture, using a new technology called Storage Spaces Direct. So if you think back to here, the storage file servers were separate from the disks. In 2016, we're combining those layers. So your file servers have the disks within them. So your individual servers are filled with disks, hard drives, SSDs, a mix. And that Storage Space Direct technology combines all of those servers in a pool and presents essentially a pool of storage that you then present to your Hyper-V nodes. So we remove that additional layer. We add flexibility. When you need to add additional nodes, you simply add them to your Storage Space Direct configuration. So by introducing this converged approach, it gives people new flexibility and new deployment options, but still gives people the performance and scale they need. I had a recent customer who I was working with back in Redmond, and they were evaluating their storage options. They were looking at multiple SANs, and we said, try Storage Spaces Direct. See what you think. And they tried it, and it delivered better performance than any of the SANs they were looking at, and it was one-fifth of the price. So 80% cheaper, which is incredible for scale, performance, and very cost-effective. And that's built into Windows Server 2016. However, we also went one step further. So in this architecture, your Hyper-V hosts are still separate from your storage infrastructure. So still two layers. In 2016, we're also enabling what we call hyper-converged. And hyper-converged essentially says, okay, let's condense things down further. So we'll combine Hyper-V, and the storage nodes together. So if you notice, we've lost a layer here. We've lost these physical Hyper-V hosts. They've disappeared because now they exist here. We combine storage and Hyper-V onto the same servers for a hyper-converged configuration. And that, again, gives new flexibility, new options for people. So very powerful. So that's one of the key investments in storage in Windows Server 2016. But you'll learn more later about some of the others, like storage replication, storage quality of service, and many more. Lots and lots of new storage features built in to Windows Server 2016. But I want to change direction slightly and introduce a new deployment option for Windows Server. Historically, Windows Server has been, you could deploy Windows Server in really one or two ways. If you think back to Windows Server 2008, we first introduced Server Core. Server Core was a smaller footprint, command line experience installation option for Windows Server. The adoption of Server Core hasn't been as high as we would have liked. However, with NanoServer, we're changing things and giving people another option to deploy Windows Server. So when we think about why NanoServer is important, we listen to what customers really wanted. Firstly, reboots are painful. The more reboots I have to do, the more downtime. That's point number one. My images, my server images that I deploy across the network, they're too big. My images are too big because they've got a lot of things within them. The Windows Server image is 10 gigabytes now. That's big. If I'm deploying lots of those across the network, that's valuable bandwidth I'm using. And it takes time. And then resources. If I've got big operating systems running on servers or in virtual machines, but they're not doing a great deal, they're not resource efficient. They're not optimized. And we want to make sure that we are maximizing our efficiency within the infrastructure. And that's where customers said, look, I want a Windows Server operating system that has only the components I need and nothing else. If I want this to be a Hyper-V host, I want this to just have Hyper-V and nothing else. If I need this server to be a storage node and nothing else. Very specific. And it needs to be optimized for the cloud, for the next generation of infrastructure. And that's where NanoServer comes in. So NanoServer is a new headless, so there's no GUI, 64-bit only deployment option for Windows Server. Deployment option is the important term here. It's not a separate version of Windows Server. It's not a separate license of Windows Server. It's just a deployment option. But it is an incredible change for Windows Server. In this first wave of Windows Server 2016, NanoServer is really designed for two things. Number one, infrastructure, Hyper-V, storage. So the things I talked about earlier with Storage Spaces Direct and the Hyper-V features. It's designed for that. The second is applications. Running applications natively on NanoServer is a very efficient way to run your applications because it's very lightweight. And we'll see that shortly. But as you can see from the graphic that's trying to illustrate on the right there, the full Windows Server that many people deploy on the right-hand side. Very big, 10 gigabytes, lots of roles and features. NanoServer on the left, incredibly small. 25 times smaller than a full server. 25 times smaller. We're expecting 2 or 3 reboots a year for NanoServer. 2 to 3 reboots a year. That's incredible. For a Windows Server. All of those are going to be key to NanoServer. And I've got a little demonstration of NanoServer. Let me first bring up my environment, check it's still connected, which I hope it is. Oops. Let's go over here. There we go. That's not NanoServer. That's New Zealand, actually. Yeah. Right, so let me log into my environment. Okay, so this is something many of you should be familiar with, PowerShell. Yeah, woohoo. Everyone loves PowerShell. Now, the way to deploy NanoServer is very different. You don't just install a DVD of NanoServer. It doesn't work that way. You extract the contents of NanoServer from the ISO, and then you run PowerShell to deploy the image. Now, this means that it can be automated very efficiently. But let me show you. So I'm first going to import the relevant PowerShell modules that I need to manage NanoServer. And then I'm going to run this script that's essentially going to, let me just kick this off. Here we go. I'm going to give it a password, and I'll explain what it's doing in a second. So what it's doing here, this first line, line number 8, we're creating a new NanoServer image. We're going to store it here. So it's going to create a virtual hard disk for me. It's going to give the NanoServer the name of, in this case, Nano Vanilla 3. I don't know why I choose Nano Vanilla 3, but there you go. And this is important, this little dash guest drivers. The reason this is important, this is a parameter that defines what NanoServer will do. Remember the slide before when I said, give me only the components I need. That is only the components it needs. If I'm installing Nano in a VM, I use dash guest drivers. If I want this to be a Hyper-V host, I use dash Hyper-V. If I want this to be a storage node, dash storage. So there are a number of packages that I can add more than one. It doesn't have to just be a single package. But they determine what NanoServer actually does. If you included no packages, it would still boot. It just wouldn't do a great deal, you know. But that's up to you. And then the second line is just creating a new virtual machine using the virtual hard disk that we created just there. So that's going to take a minute. In fact, it's finished. Perfect timing. There you go. So now, hopefully, if I go to my Hyper-V manager, there is Nano Vanilla 3. It's running. Here's some cool stuff to look at. If I zoom in here, oops, it's not helpful at all. Bear with me while my zoom tool figures out what it's doing. You can see the memory demand as the screen just casually moves across there. 143 meg of memory usage for a Windows server. It's incredibly efficient. And if we zoom out of there again, because that wasn't particularly helpful, and we look at the settings of this VM, and look at the virtual disk that we just created, the size of the virtual machine, 470 megabytes for a Windows server. Compare that to a complete fresh installation of a full Windows server, which is 10 gig. So all of the things around speed of deployment, you saw how fast it was for me to deploy a new Windows server there. Is it running? Of course it is. So let's console to this new VM. And I said it has no GUI. Well, you know, it does have kind of a GUI. Oops, no, I definitely need to have the right credentials. Administrator, there we go. And the password I entered just earlier, hopefully. And there we go. That is NanoServer in all its glory, beautiful, simplicity. But all I can, this view is actually called the NanoServer Recovery Console. I can't create VMs from here. I can't launch PowerShell. This is only really used if I've really messed things up and I need to recover somehow. So I can come to, for instance, the firewall or the networking here, and I can look at my network adapters and I can turn on DHCP or give a static IP. You know, real basic last-ditch management when I'm pretty much got no other options, because I would manage it remotely using PowerShell or using remote server management tools. Now, I want to give you a quick comparison of what's essentially running on a nano server versus on a full Windows server. So let me just go to the top here, and I'm going to get my credentials, which I think I've already, or I should have already, but I'll enter them here anyway. I have so many passwords that I hope this is the right one. So I've got my credentials. What I'm going to do is I'm going to establish a remote PowerShell session into a full Windows server. So a Windows server that has a GUI and everything else. And you can see here now that I'm connected remotely with the WS2016 indication there. I'm going to get all of the processes that are running on this particular server. And you'll see there's lots of processes, 31 processes running on this full Windows server. Let's exit, and let's go into Nano. And the important thing to note with the full Windows server is it's just a regular, fresh Windows server deployment, no extra roles or features. So that's where that 31 number comes from. Now I'm logged into the Nano server, and I'm going to do the same thing, and what you'll find is only 19. So a significant reduction in number of services that are running on that Nano server, which means more efficiency, more specific, doing what it needs to do. So that was just a little demonstration of Nano server. I'm going to hop back to my slides. Once you start managing Nano server remotely, it's no different from a regular Windows server. There's no difference, except it's headless, it's very small, and very efficient. So I would recommend certainly try, test out Nano server, start to play with it, understand it. It will boot from cold in less than 10 seconds, and you'll be sat at that login prompt. It's incredibly quick. So that was a bit about Nano server, but I mentioned before applications and containers are incredibly important to the future of applications. As I said before, containers have been around in Linux for years and years and years, but they're new to the Windows ecosystem. But what are they? Well, they're a new way, for Windows at least, to build, ship, deploy, and run applications. But let's think of history for a second. Traditionally, when a new application was required in your IT environment, in the days before virtualization, you'd need a new physical server because you don't want this app to conflict with that application and that application. So we'd get a new physical server, we'd run the application on that physical server, and it would be very poor utilization. It would work, but it just wouldn't be very efficient. And then virtualization came along, and everything changed. Because now you could consolidate so many applications inside VMs on reduced physical hardware. And you benefited from things like live migration, high availability, quick deployment of applications, and so on. But now bring in containers. And containers change the way we deploy and run applications. By packaging applications within containers, containers share the underlying operating system. So what we see on the slide here, imagine this large gray, oh, there was a big hole there, this large gray server, that could have been a disaster. This large gray server here is what we call our container host. Our container host, Windows Server 2016. You create containers on that container host, and all of the containers you create share the container host. It's not like virtual machines where you have your Hyper-V host and then each virtual machine has its own operating system in isolation. With containers, each container shares the underlying operating system, which is why it's very efficient. Because you only need to maintain one copy of the files, you essentially are sharing that underlying operating system to the point where you can achieve significant density for containers. So when we think about that in more detail, we create containers, we install our applications within containers, and our containers have dependencies. So our application might have a dependency on a database or a .NET framework or Java or PHP or whatever it may be. So we encapsulate those within individual containers. Now, containers is a form of virtualization. It's not something that's unrelated to virtualization. It is a form of virtualization, but it's not the same as Hyper-V or VMware. This is an OS virtualization, an operating system virtualization, very lightweight. And it slices each slice of the operating system into these containers. And as I said before, shares the host operating system. That's very different from virtual machines. But it is flexible because they're portable. I can pick up a container, take it from one machine to another, and run it without any modification, which is extremely powerful for a developer. I could be building an application on my laptop or workstation, package within a container, and then send to the data center where I know it will run without modification. And that's very powerful for a developer. And above all, they're incredibly, incredibly fast. I can start containers in a second, or even less. New container, done. New container, done. Incredibly quickly. A NanoServer is a great host for containers. So think about that combination. Incredibly fast, efficient container host, and really lightweight containers. Very efficient. But what do you use them for? Well, they're great for databases, web workloads, tasks or stateless workloads that just need to run for a period of time and then stop. And you'll learn more about this a bit later on in the dedicated container session after. But I just wanted to introduce the concepts. They're really efficient, but they're not for every workload. You wouldn't run Exchange in a container, or very unlikely. However, for web front ends, for line of business applications, perfect. They're a great fit for containers. And the reason scale out was called out on that slide is because of the speed you can add more containers. So think about a website. You've got a single container running your website. Everybody in the room logs on because there's a sale. The container starts to struggle. Let's add more containers. In seconds, you could have gone from one container to 100 containers. And now everybody can log on and access the website. And then when they're not needed, we can just destroy them because they're very stateless. They can be very easily discarded. But what are the key building blocks that make up a container? Well, firstly, you have what we call the runtime. When you say start container, this is what's running, the container runtime. But every container needs data to run. It needs an image. It needs an operating system. And so for that, you use what's called an image. Microsoft provide the base image for Windows Server containers. So we give you an image, and from there you create containers, all using that one base image. But then as you need to make changes, as you need to install applications within your containers, you can't write back to this original base image, because that would affect every single container that shares this image. So we have to create new images. And we store those in our repository. So you'll see our image repository here on the right. It's got the base image. It's got another image that's just got a framework, like Node.js, as an example. And then you've got another container or another image that's just got the application. And that application may be a web front end or a database application, whatever it may be. Either way, we've separated them into separate images, all of which have a dependency on one another. But these are all very lightweight and very efficient. And I'll show you in a brief demo what I mean in a few minutes. But Microsoft actually has two types of container. There's a Windows Server container, great for hosting, very fast, scalable, efficient. But remember what I said before. Containers share the host OS. If you've got 50 Windows Server containers running on a host OS, they're all sharing that host OS, and they're not, those 50 containers are not isolated from one another in the same way that virtual machines are. And if you're a service provider or a hoster with lots of customers, you've got lots of customers' containers that are not independently isolated from one another. They're namespace isolated, but not hardware isolated. But that's where our Hyper-V technology comes in. Because with Hyper-V containers, we encapsulate and secure those regular Windows Server containers in an extra level of security. So you've got the best of both worlds. The best thing for developers is they build their application for a container once, and it works with either of these runtimes with no modification. So let me quickly flick through and show you, this kind of illustrates what I was talking about, a quick demo on containers. Oh, I need to change machines. There we go. So we're back in good old PowerShell, very briefly. I don't think I've ever done so many PowerShell demos in a single session. But anyway, here we go. So I'm going to log in to my container host first. So I'm going to give my password again. Is that the right IP? Let me just check something. Yeah, there we go. Oops. Oh, hang on. I know what's there. There we go. I need to exit my previous PS session. Hang on. This is why I don't do many PowerShell demos. This exact reason. There we go, back out of there. So I was still in the previous PS session. All right, so let's try again. So what I'm doing now is I'm establishing a remote PowerShell connection to my container host. Remember, this is an operating system, physical or virtual, doesn't matter, that's got the container technology built in, Windows Server 2016. So let's firstly have a quick look and get a container image. And you'll see that we've got an image that's called Windows Server Core, so a Windows Server base image. Think of this, if it helps, as like a read-only virtual disk that I could then create lots of containers from. I need a starting point for all of that, and that's what my base image is for. Now I'm going to create a new container called Madrid. I'm going to give it a name to start with, and I'm going to create that container. So I'll walk through what's happening here. So new container, the name, Madrid, computer name, so inside the operating system, Madrid. The image I'm going to use, Windows Server Core, and I'm going to connect it to a network. And once it's, so it creates just like that, but to start it, let's start the container, and there we go. That container is now running. Compare that to a virtual machine, would typically take a little bit longer. Now I'm going to establish a PowerShell connection into the container. Because at the moment, it's not doing anything. I need to make it do something, at least. So I'm in that container now. You can see here the Madrid word here. So that means I'm in that container. And I'm going to install very quickly a web server. So I'm downloading from the internet an open source web server, which I'm now going to expand. And that's done. I'll now exit the container, and then I'll stop it. So what I've done there, I've started the container, I've logged in, I've made some changes, I've installed an app, I've done something, I've logged out, and I've stopped the container. Now, if I want to retain those changes I've made, I need to save the image. So there's our container that I just created. So I'm going to use new container image, and essentially create a new image that's got those changes within. So you'll see now, if I do get container image, there are two listed, the base image, that's the Windows Server OS, and the Madrid image that I just created. The only difference between them is that the Madrid image contains those web server files that I downloaded. So it'll be, I don't know, 15 megabytes in size, that particular image. But there is a dependency between Madrid image and the Windows Server base image. And now, very quickly, I can create a new Windows Server container. Let's call it Madrid 2. I'm going to create this new container from the Madrid image that I just created. I'm going to start it up. just like that. There we go. I'm going to log in very quickly, and I'm going to start the web server inside that container. So this is a brand new container that I created. Oops. There we go. Now I know that this particular virtual machine or this particular container has a what the web address is, so I'll just navigate to that. There we go. Our web server in the container. So what we saw there, and I appreciate it was a very quick breeze through of container. You'll learn more in the next session. The key thing is around containers, it does take a little bit of getting used to. If you've spent years working with virtual machines like I had, working with containers plays with your mind a little bit. It takes time to get used to. But once you get it, and once you start to use them and work through the documentation, it becomes a lot more straightforward. The key thing is, for you, is making sure that you understand why you're using containers versus virtual machines. The agility, the speed, the way you can quickly provision them using automated tools like PowerShell. That is very, very important. Now, I just wanted to go, I'm conscious of the time, so I wanted to wrap up by talking about the final key area of investment and something that's incredibly important and strategic to Microsoft going forward, and that's the Azure Stack. The Azure Stack takes all of our learnings, all of our experience, our management, all of the Azure that's available in the public cloud, takes a huge amount of that technology and code and brings it on-premises for you. So let me explain. When you think about a hybrid cloud platform, you think, okay, we need some infrastructure at the bottom, some virtualization, some storage, some networking. We want to provide services on top, like virtual machines or websites or database as a service. You'll be familiar with those from Azure or AWS and other cloud platforms. We need an application model that lets developers build applications effectively. And we need to be able to provide an experience where users consume and access that hybrid environment. Those are the key building blocks. So when we think about what we're doing with Azure in the public cloud in Microsoft data centers, you've got cloud infrastructure that you as a consumer of Azure never need to worry about. You don't need to patch your Azure hosts. You don't need to go to an Azure data center and plug a cable in. We, Microsoft, do all of that for you. What you need to do as a tenant of Azure is deploy virtual machines, deploy websites, deploy virtual machines and applications from templates using our Azure Resource Manager. And you deploy all of those either through the portal, through PowerShell or scripting tools, or through other automation tools and DevOps tools. That's in public cloud Azure. But then when we think about private cloud in your data center, we take all of that cool stuff from Azure and we package it as the Azure Stack and we bring it to you to run in your data centers. So you'll notice the same kind of things on the right-hand side. Cloud-inspired infrastructure, using Hyper-V, software-defined storage, software-defined networking. The IaaS and PaaS services to deploy virtual machines, virtual networks, websites, and more. The same Azure Resource Manager, which enables me to deploy workloads at scale very quickly. It's uniform, it's the same across both. And then the portal is the same. So what this means is, as a developer, I have a common set of APIs to build my applications and deploy them on premises and in the cloud. That's true hybrid flexibility. And that's something that's unique to Microsoft. Amazon can't offer that. They don't have an on-premises option. VMware's public cloud hasn't taken off in the same way as its on-premises technology has. So only Azure and Azure Stack is the true hyperscale public cloud and on-premises private cloud that can deliver true hybrid. So it's that common development experience, common portal and UI, and more. So when we think about what kind of services we're delivering, it's virtual machines, it's virtual network, it's containers, They'll come in the future. It's websites and much more. It's the kind of things that you are used to deploying and running in Azure, but it's in your data center. And I want to give you a very quick demo before I do. It's when you think about developers, this is what I was talking about before. As a developer, I want to build once and run anywhere. That is, for me as a developer, maximum efficiency. If I need to build for every single location that I'm deploying, that's going to take me a lot of time. But if I can build once and deploy anywhere without modification, that's great for a developer. And that's what this Azure Resource Manager model provides. I can build once and deploy my application to Azure Stack or Azure without modification. So let me just give you a quick demo before we wrap up and summarize. One of these days, I will get used to flicking over the screen. I just need the steps. That's what it is. It's all about the steps. Right. So here we go. Let me just... So most of you, I hope, will be familiar with Azure, or have used Azure or seen Azure in some shape or form. This is Microsoft Azure running in Microsoft data centers, public cloud, available to everybody, although it's not there isn't a data center in the Spanish region, but globally it's available in a lot of places. Now, to create a new virtual machine, I would go new. I'm going to go for, I'll go virtual machines. And I'm going to choose from a gallery of options that I've got available to me that would enable me to deploy virtual machines in the environment. I'm not quite sure why it's taking a little while there to load, but I don't have that many in my gallery. Oh, authentication issues, great. So I would choose virtual machine. Let me just refresh this page just to see if I can... Let's refresh, see if it... The universal help me please is the refresh button when it comes to cloud services. Yeah, cloud demos are really short when the internet connection doesn't work. So virtual machine, see, the universal fix-it tool was refresh. There you go. So I'm going to choose virtual machines. I'm going to choose Windows Server 2012 R2. I'm going to choose to create. I can read the information if I like, but I'm not going to because I have time. And then from a basics perspective, I'm just going to give it a name of Matt001, username, this doesn't really matter. I'm going to choose a subscription. So the key thing here is I'm just walking through this wizard to essentially create this virtual machine. So once I've done the basic settings, I choose the virtual machine size. So I'm going to just choose, in this case, a D1 V2 virtual machine, which says I'm going to get so much SSD, so much storage, so much memory, and so on. Gives me prices as well. I'm not going to click create, so I won't get charged for now. So we'll select that one. And those are the monthly charges. I can configure some stuff around networking, virtual network names, subnets, IP addresses, and so on. And then I've got a summary, and then go ahead and create. That, for me, as a developer, incredibly quick. And I could automate all of that through PowerShell or through another scripting option. But what about if I want to run that in my data center? Well, let me show you, with my 20 RDP sessions here, the Azure Stack. Because that is Azure technology in my data center. So you notice Azure Stack, Azure Stack. Azure Stack is in my data center. And I'll go through the same process again. In fact, I would go to compute. There's my Windows Server. And I could populate this gallery of virtual machines with as many images as I need for my environment. And I'll choose the basics. And I'll create, and you'll see it's identical. So we're providing you with the ability to run Azure technology within your data center, using your hardware, using your networks, using your storage infrastructure, and it's all within your data center for your compliancy, for your requirements, which is incredibly powerful. And the demo is short, but you'll learn more about Azure Stack later this afternoon. It's incredibly powerful, and I urge you to start to try these things out. Because with Windows Server, with the Ops Management Suite, which you briefly touched on earlier on, and the Azure Stack, there's a phenomenal amount of technology that is available for you to try. Windows Server is available in evaluation, TP4, Technical Preview 4. The Technical Preview 1 of Azure Stack is available to download. It's a proof of concept style, so you download it, you run it on a single server, press go, come back in 3 hours, and it will have be ready for you, hopefully. Mine was about 3 hours. I urge you to try these things out. Give them a go, see what they can do for you, and they will truly help you modernize your data center. So thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. It was great to see so many of you. And if there's any questions, I'll be around during the day if you want to grab me. So thank you very much. And yeah, I'll sign off. Thank you.